Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Oh, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 657 of Flow Wrestling Radio Live. I'm your host, Christian Piles, joined today by JD Raider and Ben Funky Askren. Ben is not in his normal studio, and there's a reason why. Go for it. This is
why are you trying to pick on me?
Because it's
ran
funny.
Over, you know what? It was partially my fault with my lawnmower. It's partially, they didn't do a great job of burying it. They should have buried it better. And they couldn't come till 9 a.m. today, so that's what hour away almost. So I had to come over here.
Dang! So you lawn mowed your internet, and now you're elsewhere. But we're glad we appreciate the
did
effort.
Did Ben cause the internet outage?
Are
this
you
early morning?
Yeah, is that who we need to look to?
It could have been me. You know, one little cord in Wisconsin, it's boom, broke the campus back.
Yeah, if you don't know, basically, I could loosely say the internet went down this morning.
Yes.
Sometime. So, to the point that it caused outages for not just us, but like Amazon,
Twitch.
Reddit, Twitch, all over the place. So, widespread issues. But I guess things are back on flow, at least. I don't know about the other sites, but...
Probably not.
Probably not. We're on the cutting edge.
Hey, I'm looking through these polling results, Christian. The other result was Valencia over Amin, 7-1. It's pretty interesting.
Yes, he beat him pretty good. It was, Amin got in on a beautiful outside step.
We have a clip of,
ooh,
Tyler.
Perfect. Watch this, Ben. Boom. And then...
as I'm almost dead to rights.
I mean, he was, like, behind him.
Wait, did Zahid dye his hair?
Yeah, back to blonde, baby.
You didn't know Zahid dyed his hair?
What was this when?
He's dyed it, I mean, I would say a year ago. When he graduated
You're
from AS...
he's had dyed hair for an entire year.
So, what I will say is, around the time of his graduation last year, he dyed his hair blonde. And then I don't know if when he wrestled JB if he had blonde hair, but I feel like
I don't think so. I watched that match. I don't
think
he had blonde
hair. Didn't.
I don't
He's
think
gone
he had
back
hair
and forth. He's definitely had it before though.
Yeah. He was blonde like last
about this time last year.
Yeah. So maybe it's his summer look, you know?
Some people get naturally a little more blonde.
Mm-hmm.
He does it artificially.
For all we know, that's just the sun. We don't know that he's dyeing it then.
Ryan from The Office style.
Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe he spent some time in Thailand.
So we kind of missed the we kind of missed the discussing.
That was nice though.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, and it's like that's so mentally demoralizing. If you're mean, you get in that deep, that clean like that, and then don't score, and not only don't score, but he got scored on, he gave up the takedown, and then a gut. Two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was the only time he pretty much came close to scoring.
That's one thing with Zahid that's kind of discounted or just not discussed as much is he's really good on top. He's had a good gut wrench for years. He turns a lot of pretty good guys.
And that one, it was the transition. It was the takedown right into it on the edge.
Yes. So here, I'm looking here as April 2020, he was fully blonde.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I'll put it
in the doc, Tyler. There you go.
That's funny.
He's very blonde. Have you ever dyed your hair? Can you imagine you got full curls?
I've never dyed my hair of any color.
Yeah. You've got enough going on.
You clearly never qualified for state wrestling then.
Yeah, you never even made it to states, bro. Oh my gosh. All these years, everyone thinks you're good and you never even made it to states.
That's funny.
It's embarrassing.
Oh, man. No, never dyed my hair, not one time.
Same. JD, did you dye your hair?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, zero. So we have no state qualifiers among us.
Nope.
All right. Well, that's okay. So other notable results at Poland, there are very many.
Yeah, day one was hopping.
The biggest one, and here's the blonde footage of Zahid.
The biggest result is the no result at 57 with no Suriano, Nato moving up.
Yes, yes. So
Nato moves up a weight class?
He's going to be at 61 now, according to Rhys Humphrey.
Oh, moving forward?
For this tournament, anyway, he registered at 57 originally, and then Rhys tweeted the other night that Nato up at 61.
So this tournament is not scratch. It is scratch.
It is scratch.
There's no allowance at this tournament.
All ranking series are scratch weight.
So don't even try to get an allowance, because it's not happening. So we have no 57s at all, because Soriano is not there.
Micic went undefeated so far.
At 57?
Yes.
I'll count him, Christian. Micic, that's one of our dudes. Well, I hope that has a flag behind it. That's one of our dudes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He's from Gary, Indiana.
He's from Gary, Indiana. Is he from Gary?
He's from Gary Wayne Harding, Indiana.
Well, that's where – I know Angel Escobedo's from Gary, but I didn't know that Stevan was as well.
He's definitely that north northwest corner, like close to Chicago. I don't know exactly which high school, though, and I don't think it was Gary.
Did you go to the same high school as Michael Jackson?
I don't know where Michael Jackson went to high school at.
He probably wasn't allowed to go to high school.
Yeah, he was enormously famous at age like 6.
That's a good point. JD is our resident Michael Jackson historian. One of the many reasons we brought him on at Flo. 70, I think, has the biggest result of results, which is Alec Pantaleo taking out Haji Aliyev 6-6.
Best match of the day.
Very good match. So we've got some highlight footage here for you that you can watch if you're on the video. And starts off with the opening four from Pantaleo when Aliyev fought the takedown a little too hard and then got feet to back.
Quad
pod, holding on in quad pod can be dangerous.
Yes.
Very.
This was actually probably the sequence of the entire match, although there were no points scored.
Yeah, this is crazy. But no, nice. Not that one.
Not that one. Similar position, though, from
one.
Quad pod. Pantaleo gets behind. Aliyev looks like he's dead to rights, and then he looks like he has Pantaleo dead to rights.
This is a crazy, crazy scramble.
That's a good last one, boys.
Yeah.
That is good last one.
So a big win for Pantaleo.
Yeah, although he almost blew it.
Right there.
Haji took him down and gutted him in the last 10 seconds to tie it, but Pantaleo won 6-6 on criteria.
So Haji Aliyev obviously is heavily reliant on that. We call it turtle shell, where it brings the elbow in there. Wasn't there a really questionable call? It was like first round of worlds. It was him and someone else really good.
Rashidov,
yes. Yes. And that was to match.
Yes, that was a crazy, crazy one. And Haji took the paddles and was throwing them. He was very upset.
Yes.
He did not take that loss in stride.
Also, Haji looked pretty big and not soft at 70, so have fun at 65 in Tokyo, dude.
Dude, 2016, this guy was an Olympian at 57 kilograms.
Correct.
Which, at the time, we were like, this is not going to work. He's not. This is not something that he should even consider doing. And he did it, and you're like, yeah, but he's going to do terrible. But he got freaking bronze. He did great, and you know, every Olympic bracket's amazing, but 57 was super tough.
Yeah, before
I think it's something we've talked about a lot. Pantelio, he's a real deal, Bubba, but he just can't make – him and Green really can't make 65. They're just a little too big, but they can compete with the best guys in the world, that, as witnessed by that match. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for whoever, right, one of those – I think one of those two will make the team at 70 kg for this year's Worlds, and I think do really well.
So Green beat him again after that match, after he beat Aliyev.
Mm-hmm. What,
yes. So – He continues to prove to be a tough matchup for Pantelio, but I'm with you that they look to be right now the class of 70. Obviously James is, right, but if you're looking for that top contender, I think it's on results Alex up there. Now we'll see if any guys like, would someone like Zane consider moving up? I think that would be interesting.
Well, 65 is going to have a wrestle off, obviously. So maybe, you know, I could see Zane moving up, but I could also see him not.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of James Green, Ben, did you watch?
Well, I watched it, yes.
What'd you think? Who is I'm talking about, and I should say, newest movie. Flow film came out. Who is James Green? And, yeah, we promised to talk about it. So, Ben, what were your thoughts?
Really good movie. Great getting to know the backstory of James. And I'll tell you, one funny thing they talked about them taking to the East Jarlsberg Open. I remember watching a match, and I don't remember if it was junior or senior in high school, but of him and I believe it was Dylan Alton at the East Jarlsberg Open. And Dylan Alton won, but it was a really good match. Mm-hmm. And you could tell, like, wow, these guys are both really high level for high school kids.
Yeah, it was. And it was that thinking about Alton, it's interesting to hear Bob Acosta, who, if you don't know, if you haven't seen it yet, please watch it. But Bob Acosta was like a mentor, coach kind of figure, a huge figure in James's life, and really invested a lot of time into getting him around wrestling and in the right places after, you know, James' father passed away. But anyway, he talks about how Kale recruited the Altons and had them, got both of them, but then kind of like, not that he had remorse about that, but like thought, man, I really maybe missed an opportunity with James Green. So I thought that was an interesting little nugget. Yeah, so I thought it was awesome. I think it's obviously a really tough story. And, you know, thinking about James losing his father at age 10 and what a figure he was in his life. But to see the ups and downs for James and how his – I mean, he seems so just even keel all the time, and you have to wonder if, like, his early, you know, Bob, I think, basically said, like, his early hardships really helped kind of forge him into the man he is now, and really just an awesome wrestling success story about giving someone some that focus and something to invest in, and people around him investing in him, and it's just a really cool story, and James is such an easy guy to root for.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt the same way. I feel like, you know, kind of even without the movie, James is just super likable.
Yeah,
obviously we haven't done the show before. It was really good seeing the backstory. I loved it.
Yeah. Any thoughts, James Dean?
Not particularly on the film. I did not know too much actually about his backstory. But I do have some thoughts on his finals match with Pantelio, which we have a clip of. There's one part in particular that really kind of fired me up. It's not here. James pretty much just controlled this match. There was one really cool four. But right here, they don't call this grounded. And you can pause the clip, Tyler.
That's one point.
Yeah, but it's so inconsistently called grounded that I hate it. If you're going to have a bad rule, at least call it consistently. Half the time that's called grounded, half the time it's not. If you're just listening to this on Spotify or iTunes or whatever, James takes a shot relatively close to the middle of the mat. Pantelio sprawls and Green drives him out of bounds. Like, but if that's not grounded, what is?
Well, I would say he's Pantelio comes off his knees, so that's what I always look for. So James does a good job of getting under him enough that he has to come up. So I mean, I think this would have been see right there. I think this would have been an audacious grounding call, but we've seen worse.
Yeah, well, then there are times where dudes clearly just drop down to their knees on the edge so that they can go out of bounds grounded, and that's called grounded. Like, get rid of this rule.
Bad rule.
Or call it consistently. I've had enough with the grounded rule.
JD's seen enough.
I mean, I'm all in favor of getting rid of it, for sure.
What's the purpose of it, even? It's gamed more than it's useful. Anytime somebody steps out, that should be a point.
Yeah. It's like a slip. Yeah. It's more often a bail than an actual legitimate attempt. Yes. To whatever. Doesn't it?
And so, like, I think the point of it is that, like, a guy can do a wrestling move like sprawl, laces down, and not get pushed across the mat. But it's like, don't get pushed out.
Yeah.
Wrestle.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah, be offensive.
Don't be offensive, or you risk offending JD.
Yes. Got it.
So he ends up winning. James really kind of controlled that match.
He had a cool four.
Yeah, he did on the edge. Maybe we can watch that. That was like the match deciding exchange, really, because Pantaleo was running. He was on the attack and kind of like a wizard kick from Green. Yeah, I think it's right here.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Takes him over gets the four, and then that puts the match well out of reach. James up 7-0, you can forget about it.
Yes.
Okay, Mohamedian beat Colin Moore soundly 10-0.
Oh, he manhandled Colin Moore.
He looks ridiculous again. And then he beat Karimi 2-2, and we're awaiting his finals match.
Here's the one takedown he got in this match. And this match was boring as hell. This happened in the first 15 seconds, and nothing else happened. Mohamedian shut it down. He didn't take one more offensive attack. He gave up a shot clock point with like 30 seconds left, and then he just let Karimi kind of push him out with 15 seconds left or something like that. It was pretty atrocious they didn't put him on the shot clock sooner, but Karimi didn't do anything to kind of force that shot clock.
He seems like a guy, if given that, I wonder if he's a guy, if you can weather the early storm, if you can.
Yes.
That's what gives me hope for him.
He
and
was
Steiner.
Breathing heavy after he teched Colin Moore.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Americans have had success against Karimi, and Mohamedian feels like 10-0. He 10-0'd Moore, Snyder, and Nickel all. It's, it's not looking very hopeful against him. Right now, almost to the point where could he go with Sage Live is something that's got me thinking.
I don't think he can, and I also the Karimi match gives me hope, because to your point, this is a guy with, you know, Jaden Cox has had great success against. We've had I think we've had other Americans beat him. Amin has beaten him, I believe. So he's like Karimi would not make a team in America, right? So the fact that Mohamedian is 2-2 with him. I'm thinking, okay, throw out the 10-0 pin or whatever it was for
That's
Kyle.
Also, a 2-2 where if he had to, he probably could have scored more points, but he scored that and did not take one offensive attack after that one in the first 15 seconds.
Yeah, I think that to me is a confidence or something going on there that he didn't want to attack more. I don't know. It gives me a little bit more hope. I will choose to look at that positively. A 2-2 win over Karimi can only be viewed as a positive for American wrestling fans.
Oh, yeah.
And if he could have scored more, I mean, he certainly didn't. And there's been many matches where he has wanted to score more and did. So, you know what? And also, he has to win his finals match, which has not yet been wrestled. But I'm sure if it's not wrestled during the show today, we will talk about it tomorrow. But yes, he is very, very good.
It won't be wrestled during the show, I don't think, because I don't think those are supposed to start until 11.
Okay, got it. So we will not be doing that. But that is a big result. And you know, Hui Ran sends is you know, very, very notable news for the Olympic Games.
Also notable, 97, Sharifov lost.
Yeah, who beat him?
The Italian by way of Cuba. Yes. He was world bronze in 2018, I believe, and this exchange right here is where all the points were scored. Sharifov takes a decent shot, but gets way extended, and then eventually gets stepped over. Yeah, right here.
Wow, that was nice. He looked kind of dead to rights there. That's so. And
Trifov just looked like.
You old. Never know if he's gonna give a rip.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was like he got in on that shot and then was like not hustling to the finish and got extended, and that's how he got stepped over.
He's such a legend, but he takes some L's along the way. But then he beats.
That kind of makes him more of a legend, in my opinion, that he just doesn't care and can still beat like Kale and Jaden.
Yeah, he's beaten a lot of and Kyle.
Daggone
it, Sharifov.
Daggone it.
You're so hard to.
I mean, I don't know. If we watch the clip again, I don't feel like he stopped hustling. I feel like he thought it was more of like he thought he had him. And,
let's watch.
You know, there. I mean, he really has the guy's hips pulled way underneath him, and somehow the Cunado. I think that's a bad word. So I probably should say Cunado.
Yeah,
like
he tries to go crackdown.
Instead. Right. He has, no.
Right. Hold on. Ready. Right.
Right
here.
There. Pause. He's done.
That's like yeah. That's like 98% done.
Yeah. So
he pulls him so far for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what he thought. He's like, wait, what just – ah. Yeah, I'm kind of with you now, seeing it again. I mean, that he was in such good position. He just
lost.
Yeah,
that pull he had was ridiculous, and he almost, like, totally flipped. We talk about when we pull that, like, single leg, getting a guy's foot to kick a football, so going way up in the air, he did that. He is, like, way up in the air, and the guy recovered his hips.
Yeah. Some guys can just, like – you can do everything, and then it's like the rules just don't apply. Especially at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Other news, Adam Kuhn, part-time astronaut, part-time wrestler, now football player. He's signed to the Tennessee Titans. This is pretty sweet. I'm curious. You know, he hasn't played football since high school, but it's often been discussed, like, this guy seems like a guy that could be just incredible football, given he's so athletic for his size.
He was very good in high school.
You can, so imagine how big you can make Adam Kuhn. Like, Adam Kuhn legitimately has to cut weight.
And then the press release, they listed him at 300 pounds.
Oh, easy.
But that's not incredibly big for an NFL offensive lineman.
He could be 330 in the blink of an eye. His frame
still
is
not incredibly
so big
for an NFL offensive lineman.
He could
lineman.
Be 564 pounds in under a
very
month.
Very big for an NFL offensive lineman.
Is he going to be a guard, a tackle?
A guard center? Is what they said most likely. So they said offensive line, most likely guard.
Tackles are the biggest.
Yes, guards are more a little bit smaller, more athletic, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty cool stuff. I mean, I don't know what the likelihood of him making the team is. Obviously, the NFL tends to be competitive.
He's on the roster. They kicked some other dude off the roster for him.
I like that.
So
don't they have like a bigger roster now, and then they have to shrink it down as we get closer and closer to the season? Isn't that how it goes?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And it's like only so many guys actually.
What, 53? 53-man roster, I think?
90-man right now.
But it eventually gets down to 53.
Yeah.
This is where Kyle would be helpful.
Freaking stupid Bracky.
Yeah.
He's still committed. Bracky still thinks he's he's really committed to this bit that he's going to work at West Virginia now. It's really, he even moved his family. He's really committed to it. No, he would know. I'm almost positive it's a 53-man roster.
46 on game day, according to ESPN.com.
But I think you dress 46, but I think there can be 53 on the team.
Can include up to 48.
Kyle, you son of a gun. Okay.
Provided that at least 8 of those 48 are offensive linemen. Weird stipulation, but okay.
All right.
Oh no!
Wow.
This arrowheadpride.com says team rosters are limited to 53 players.
Yes. Like I thought, like I said, I am the new resident football expert of Flow Wrestling Radio Live.
I know nothing about football whatsoever.
I've taken that distinction. Although you just know nose tackling. That's what you know.
Yeah, I do a little swim move, tackles people, but I don't know any of the rules.
Not a rules guy. All right, so that's cool. Good luck to Adam Kuhn. And congrats to the Tennessee Titans.
So, Super Bowl champions.
Rob Cole got on the Bader show last week and was like, hey, we're going to – he is like in hot pursuit of some assistant coaches. But those announcements have not come yet. There was some speculation about where he may be looking. And I'm sure he's got a lot of awesome candidates. I do know that Damien Hahn will not be going to Stanford. He is the head coach at South Dakota State. So he's going to be remaining there.
Jackrabbits are joys.
Yes, seriously.
And so, but so it says, at least in the doc, it says that he's struggling to get assistant coaches. How do we know that he's struggling? How do we know that he doesn't have even penciled in?
Well, we don't know that.
We don't know that at all.
Well, that's what it says. I'm just taking you. That's JD's word. JD's the new doc guy.
Why has a coach not been announced? Like he said, he's going on the Bader show. Like, yeah, I'm trying to fill out my staff. Why has one not been announced yet?
Right, JD?
What?
When he was on the Bader show, I don't recall what day, but he said the following day he would announce his first assistant coach.
Yeah, but part of me is like, well, don't they have to like go through some level of like administrative red tape before they can just do that?
Yes.
They
can't just, you can't Rob just say, Poole just can't hop on Stanford and be like, and this is my new coach.
Yeah, trust me, he's a good guy. So I think it's probably that. I would be stunned if he doesn't have at least one coach on board. It's just a matter of.
Well, I've heard Vincenzo's a done deal. I've been texted that a few times.
Really?
Yes.
Well, he like when he was on Bash's podcast with Chenzo, like kind of joke courted him, but like there was a little bit of truth to that for sure. So
yeah, no, I've heard that's a done deal, but I guess we'll see.
I mean that would be music to Shane Griffith's ears. You know, get a partner like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what. You know, one of the things that I think I mentioned this on FRL, so I'm sorry if it's redundant, but Coach Blake said, he's like, we need to get Shane some more partners, you know, because, you know, he just needs to be pushed. So that would be a perfect hire. It'd make a lot of sense. You get someone that, you know, been around the Penn State program for whatever that's worth. And then, you know, quality young coach and, you know, what an opportunity for Vincenzo too. If he goes, right? Yeah, it's all speculative at this point. But Ben's getting texted about it, therefore.
But you got to trust the text. Yeah, I mean, listen, when there's smoke, there's fire, for sure.
Yes, yes. That's, you know, that's a funny thing about all the rumors and the things you get texted. They're almost all right.
Close.
Yeah, like a lot of stuff on Twitter, you'll see it's like, no, it's not. But like, if it ends up like coming to us, it ends up being right. It's kind of funny how often there's not a lot of people pulling things out of thin air.
Yeah, and
other than Rob Cole's salary.
Well, obviously, then if someone texts you and then you know they're wrong, a couple times in a row, you're like, okay, well, I'm not even going to listen to this person anymore because they're totally full of crap. Yeah. And then obviously, there are sometimes when something falls through. But like with this Vincenzo and people texting me, it's like at the very least, there's some intent there. They've had conversations. I'm assuming maybe he's going out to visit and he said, I really like it, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then like you said, there's got to be a whole bunch of administrative red tape. So they got to get through that part. So there's the potential that it falls through. But other than that, I'm assuming that it's going to happen.
I wonder who – so with Vincenzo, you get the – there's like different roles that coaches fill, like Vincenzo's going to be a brand new coach. He's going to be a really quality guy to have in the room as a partner and someone to, you know, give some experience to the wrestlers. But then do you feel like Rob's going to need a guy with like more seasoning? Do you think a more experienced assistant coach?
That'll
probably be the next Ruben. Yeah. So I wonder who that might be.
I mean, I would say Vincenzo. He seems, you know, I've never actually met him, but he seems to be very personable, very likable. So he's a guy you send out, you know, on recruiting trips and stuff like that, or to go tournaments. He obviously could be in the room working out with the guys. But usually kind of what I've seen is that younger guys like that are really struggle with like practice planning because it hasn't been on, they haven't had to do it. You know what I'm saying? So to plan out an individual practice and how they're all going to go together over the course of the season and how we're going to develop skills, like they're going to struggle more with that. And I think Rob doesn't seem like an every single day in the room type of guy.
He's the CEO coach.
Yeah, exactly. So you would need someone to kind of like take over that role. And obviously you can plug Vincenzo in and say, hey, I want you to run this practice. And then obviously he gets better at it. Vincenzo / a younger coach, right? Whoever it is.
Right.
But that takes a couple of years to like kind of figure out how you want to structure everything. Because as an athlete, you don't really have to think about that. You're having things structured for you. And once you get to be a coach, now it's like, oh, this is all on me.
Yeah. When you were a young coach, what was your role like?
I didn't do so I was assistant volunteer assistant in Missouri 2 years, and I was assistant at Arizona State 2 years. In Missouri, I was primarily just training, right, for the Olympics still. So it was like, hey, you mainly do that. Obviously, I'd work out with a lot of the guys. I had the younger guys be my training partners. And then, when there was an area of my expertise and they wanted me to, get in the room and help out, I would do that type of thing. But even as a college senior, Coach Smith realized I was kind of on the breaking edge of some of the scrambling stuff. And in the preseason, he would kind of like, hey, Ben, you just show them your moves today. show them what you're doing. And that was fairly regular, even as a college kid. So I think that was probably a little different to most people's experience.
So in addition to, us kind of waiting to see who Rob ends up bringing to Stanford, I'm also curious about Cornell, because Mike Gray, he's promoted, Rob's gone, Gabe Dean's gone. Who do they bring in?
Oh, wait, you want to know, I heard another rumor on Stanford. You ready to hear this?
Hit me.
I heard Mitch Clark.
Really?
Yes, which he hasn't been in the game for a few years. He obviously coached at Cornell for a little bit of time. I don't remember when he was done coaching there. But that would be an interesting hire because he hasn't really been coaching fairly recently.
Yes, yes. That would be an interesting hire. Pulling him out of retirement, I guess. Pretty sure he's from is he from Canton, New York? That's where my
he's from upstate New York somewhere.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So curious to see about the coaching. Are there other coaching vacancies that we're waiting to be filled or announced, JD? Trying to think.
Will American need an assistant?
Yeah, I would assume so. Although maybe they're keeping some of the.
And it's also interesting, like, where will Blake end up? Is he staying? I don't think he's staying at Stanford.
No, I don't. I don't think Coach Cole's keeping those guys around.
Yeah,
based on what it sounded like to me.
Yeah,
and Rob's interviewed himself.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the I don't want to say transfer, but the coaching moves are kind of slow this offseason. It seems like there's usually a lot more, and there hasn't been very many.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it has been. I don't know why it's been slower than usual. There haven't been any terminations or anything. Normally at the end of the season, some coaches were like, mm-hmm. Teague Moore was like, oh, but that was kind of like mid-season.
And they were
weird year, so we haven't seen.
Obi Blanc was just promoted. That's the opposite.
The opposite. Even better.
Head associate, Obi Blanc.
Yeah. All right. Next up. Where to? Christian Carroll. This is huge news. I don't know how this made it so far in the show. We're at 8:47. We haven't talked about this. JD, hit us with this one.
Christian Carroll, the number 3 sophomore right now, is going to Illinois. And he gave his verbal commitment Friday. He's a hammer, 195 pounder, probably a heavyweight in college. You would think he'd continue to put on the mass. Maybe he could stay at 97, though, but a good pickup for Poeta.
Yeah, great pickup. And Carroll was the guy that won Super 32, but the year before he was, one, much smaller, and two, injured, I believe.
Yes, so he was, has like, not off the grid. He has not wrestled a high school match, actually, yet, like, for his high school.
Scholastically.
Ever?
Ever. He was injured all of freshman year, and then he transferred as a sophomore, and I think they ruled him ineligible, so he wasn't able to wrestle. and now he's committed. So.
Dang. You know what? I didn't realize last week that Chittum was only a sophomore. I was thinking he was a junior.
Right.
I feel like this is one of those where at this age, I feel like I almost want to discount it because they still have 2 years of high school left. Like, I mean, how many people have we seen change? And what, Teasdale, right, was one of them.
Buziello. I mean, there's been
Buziello. There's been a whole bunch of really high-level guys who committed that early and then changed their mind by the time they get to their senior year because there's 2 years left before they, you know, right about 2 years from this time is probably when they'll be starting to move to college or getting ready for that move.
Yeah, it is early. What I don't understand is the, you know, what's the advantage? Because they can't. You're agreeing to going there, but they can't promise money.
Well,
yeah, they can't give you anything.
So there are ways kind of around it, but college coaches can't even reach out to high school sophomores yet. That changes June 15th. A week from today is the first day they can reach out. So now Christian Carroll he's an Indiana guy, but he is within driving distance. It's a couple hours, but I am guessing he has been to the Illinois RTC to train and work out. There you can talk to coaches, yes. Obviously. I know Chittum has been to the Minnesota RTC a time or two to work out. So you can do that stuff, but I know they obviously haven't been contacted by all the coaches that would reach out and are going to. Just because you verbal doesn't mean a coach can't reach out to you on June 15th. So
it's an interesting thing.
Didn't we have a discussion? I feel like it's been a while, Christian, but where if I'm a college coach in 2021 and someone verbals, I'm just going to recruit them like they didn't verbal. I don't give a damn.
Exactly.
Why not?
It is interesting. Some coaches are like, we do not, if you have verbaled, it is like, we will not recruit, blah, you know, no matter what. Like, we don't think there's, for whatever reason, they think ethically that's like the wrong thing to do. But I don't think I understand that, actually.
Yeah, I don't understand, especially in these scenarios, like JD just brought up, is that they can't actually get called until June 15th. We're 7 days away.
Yeah.
So if I'm Michigan, I haven't got to talk to Christian Carroll. I'm at least going to give him a call and say, hey, man, what's up? I like your wrestling. How about you come, you know, see what we got to offer? Something to that effect.
Yeah. And if Christian gets on the phone and says, hey, I'm not interested. I am not going to consider any other school. It's like, okay, fine. Then you let them alone. But I think you're – and partially you're not doing your job if you don't at least put it out there if it's someone a recruit of need.
I would also encourage, obviously different situation for every kid. Some just know they want to commit, whatever.
Yeah.
But if any high school recruit out there is asking me, I would say take all 5 visits.
Like, yeah. Absolutely.
Especially if you're like one of the blue chippers, you can get the whole you know.
Can't get that red carpet rolled out for you.
High school kids don't understand leverage. This is a very important life skill to understand your leverage.
Yeah.
If you're a Christian Carroll or Cody Chittum, listen, they're going to save the money till the last day. They are going to do that, right? Because a lot of these college coaches pulled this. Hey, you got to be committed by June 22nd. Then I got to recruit somebody else, and you're like, well, I know your date is bullcrap. And if you're like not that great, maybe there's some truth to it because they can go someone else that can replicate you. But if you're a number one, I mean, these guys are both going to be number one in their weight class. Probably come when you pull the seniors out, they're going to wait. They're going to wait. They're going to have money. And frankly, to be honest, the college coaches don't really know because who's going to quit your team in the next 2 years? You have no idea. Who's going to want to transfer? You have no idea. So the idea that you're going to know what your scholarship situation is really going to be when these guys step on campus 2 years later, it's just a lie. If you're telling someone you know, it's actually a lie.
Well, it's not I think it's
It is a lie. You don't know. There's no way you know who's going to quit, who's going to get injured, who's going to transfer. You don't know. You just don't know. It's too far away. You can say, here's what I think is going to be a situation. You can say that.
Right.
But you can't say, here's scholarship situation. That's crap.
Well, okay, but you have your roster. You have these are 4 or 5 year contracts, whatever you want to call them. That money is allotted and accounted for through however many years, right? So it's not quite as fluid as maybe your description, because there are some constraints there.
Yeah.
So it's not fully, you know, I don't think they're being fully disingenuous. And they're like, hey, man, we've got these guys are on the team. They're on the team for the next 3 to 4 years. When you would come as a freshman, this money's not. I mean, I think there are real constraints.
That's the kind of things that college coaches say. I'm telling you, I know that they tell the kids, hey, we're going to have this much money for you. And right. then they do the give. Like, well, if you don't tell us by June 20th, then that money's off the table and we're going to go to somebody else. And like I said, for some lower ranked guys, that might actually be the case because they just want to get someone committed. But yeah. for these highly ranked guys, they're going to save the money. They're going to figure out where the money is. If Cody Chittum in the fall of his senior year says, you know what, I'm not going to Minnesota, I want to go to Iowa, I'm pretty damn sure Iowa's going to figure out how to find the money at that point in time.
Yeah, they'll figure something out for sure. So, yeah.
Sorry, that subject gets me all fired up, Christian, because I believe college coaches, a lot of them, not all of them, take advantage of the naiveness. Is that a word? Naiveness?
Naivete.
Yeah. Naivete of high school kids who don't understand. High school kids' parents who don't understand this whole game. So it really pisses me off when they do that.
Yeah, that's definitely not cool. But yeah, to your point, you know, why are sophomores committing? I mean, I think they end up around the program, and you just kind of know. But to your point, and I don't think this is the end of the Christian Carroll recruiting process, at least in terms of teams pursuing Christian. Whether Christian entertains it or not, I don't know. But case in point, very recently, even though he maintained his commitment, Richard Figueroa, Richie Figs, he took visits after committing to Arizona State. And
they probably would have taken more.
What's that?
He probably would have taken more if Corona didn't happen.
True. And I don't blame Richie for doing that. I don't blame any kid for doing that.
It's an important decision.
Yeah, it's super important.
Right.
and don't, and this has nothing to do with Richie Figueroa, but in general, the coaches, not only do they, the coaches push for the public commitment at times. They say, hey, yes. Yeah, put this out. Put it out there. Are you coming?
It is beneficial to them, obviously.
What's that?
It's beneficial to the colleges.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, because then you do get those coaches that aren't going to reach out. Plus, it maybe not for all, but for some kids could definitely pressure them to, okay, I'm no longer going to take some visits, or mm-hmm. I don't want to flip my commitment, even though they kind of go, well, now I kind of maybe am thinking about going here, but I already announced that I'm going here, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also from a fan base support, you know, when a team gets someone good committed, the fan base gets all excited, then you can use that kid to say, Hey, Christian Piles, JD committed to us. You know, you guys would be great partners. You guys are already friends. Why don't you commit also? So I can use that to leverage other commitments as well. There's just you obviously as a college coach. And if I was in the game, I feel like I would try to be as transparent as possible about how I don't know what money is going to be available. But at the same time, if I can get a sophomore to commit, I'm probably going to do it because you have to.
Right. Right. Recruiting's it's an interesting game. It's a huge part of the sport. Now,
yes.
Other interesting sort of in the maybe
speaking of recruiting.
Of recruiting or not recruiting?
That's recruiting class. Recruiting.
What's that?
This is recruiting.
Okay. Well, I don't know. JD, explain the situation.
So, Kale Voinovich, whose older brother wrestles for Oklahoma State, is transferring in to Stillwater High School from Ohio. Not the first time this has happened. The Ferrari's famous move.
Not the 100th time.
Yes, correct.
I mean, the Rodgers, I mean, this goes back.
Yes, correct. But it's getting a lot of people fired up on both sides, whether how you feel about high school kids transferring for athletic purposes.
Yeah, so the most interesting part of, well, I don't know if it's the most interesting part, but we should put the tweet in there.
Mustang, Oklahoma, I believe's athletic director kind of took a jab at Stillwater High School for this. I forget exactly what he said. Something on just along the lines of it.
Tweet, Christian.
I thought I had here it is. Robert Foreman. Another high-profile wrestler moves into Stillwater, establishing residency to qualify for in-state tuition, training at Oklahoma State at the same time, benefiting a former Cowboy wrestler who coaches at Stillwater High. Interesting. I'm positive all NCAA and OSSAA rules are being followed. Laughing emoji. Here, I'll put this in the doc there.
So I just made a quick list while we were, and you guys can probably list people that I'm missing. Ross Schultz. Rochelle, Travis, T. Travis, Ferraris, Morant, Tristan Moran, Voinovich, Rogers, Dieringer. I mean, that's 8 or 9? I mean, and I'm sure I'm missing. I mean, that was just off the top of my head in 15 seconds, the guys that they've got to come down there. I think it's tremendous. I mean, I applaud whoever at Oklahoma State has the idea. It's almost amazing that
other schools don't do it more.
Like, you don't see State College, you don't see someone doing it at State College where they could train at M2 and attend. Maybe they put a coach at State College.
They do something a little, like.
What?
Like, Nick and Joe Lee and their senior year of high school, they were at State College. They didn't, I don't know where they went to school. But they've kind of moved in there. They didn't wrestle for State College High School, but they sort of moved there and then, you know. Okay. Trained,
but then Iowa City had Mark Ryland, and they had a good program for a while. And I don't recall families moving in there.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa moving there, but not out of state.
Sure, Iowa, but I mean, the ones we listed were Idaho, Missouri, Texas, Arizona, Ohio, Washington, Wisconsin. I mean, from all over the place, and. And I'm sure there's within Oklahoma's that I don't even know about. Those are just from very far away. And, I mean, I don't need to recap my feelings on living in Stillwater. But who's ever convincing these families to move from Washington or Arizona to Stillwater? That's a great job recruiting. Tremendous. I mean, yeah, and then obviously there's huge benefits. Because I think, let's see, of all those families, I think all the kids went to Oklahoma State. I mean, if they were good, right? So if they were good enough. So, for example, Dieringer's younger brothers never were on that level, so they didn't go, right? But Chandler Rogers was the younger brother. He went. Tristan Moran was the younger brother. He went. Jared Rochelle, Blake
Ferrari.
Rochelle, they went.
His younger brother is already committed.
Yep, they're going to go.
Yeah. So I've never gotten too fired up about the high school kids. Moving, transferring, going for a better situation. I think, man, you see it all the time. It happens all over the place. It happens in all sports. I'll never fault kids or families that want to, you know. I mean, I think about it all. I'd be like, man, it'd be really cool if Caleb could go to school here and be able to train with these guys and have a good coach. And I just imagine that on, like, a national level. And you've got a kid, like, you know, you've already got a guy that's going to Oklahoma State and you want the best for your son, it's a good situation. I think it makes sense. Does it eliminate some of the, I guess you could say, purity of high school sports in that, you know, you have kids representing their towns and they're trying to the school? It's like, yeah, you do lose some of that. And I do think there's something to be said for a kid that, you know, is born in Stillwater and goes to high school there, like a Cade Brock.
So I think that should only give you more pride when you do, when you are that kid and you beat that team or you beat that that kid that moved in. I know Mustang, Oklahoma, like they were wearing shirts that said homegrown. Like, yeah, that's awesome. that makes it even more cool. Like,
yeah.
you beat so y'all didn't need to move people in.
Yeah.
Or whatever, but.
Yeah.
But it's tough. You have a team. It's super competitive. You're looking really good. And then, boom, some guy not from the state, from Ohio, comes in and is maybe going to stop your team from winning.
Yeah.
I get why that irritates the if it's not helping you.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I wasn't even thinking about it on that level, which I was at another level to think about it. And I don't really care all that much if kids move a little bit to give themselves a better opportunity within their area. I don't get the across the country moves. I don't think I would do that sacrifice for my high school kids. My own biological kids, I would try to get them a good situation somewhere where we live.
Well, it's also beneficial because you get to be in your, you know, son's college town and get to watch them,
right,
and still have your whole family together instead of the one being across the country.
And also, to be fair, Ben,
I wouldn't like that. I would have said I'm out on that. I wanted to get away. I mean, listen, I love.
Well,
my
yeah, if you're the kid, that's what I would have said.
I want to get away, too. Bro. I want to go to college. Stillwater isn't big. They're gonna know what you're doing. That's not gonna be great.
They're going to end up at senior, what's it called?
What kind of girls you're hanging out with, JD? You don't want that.
I would not have wanted that. That's why I went to school out of state.
Me too. Like, 7 hours was perfect. They could come visit me if they wanted to, but they, you know, they weren't
but
in my
not
backyard.
But not all people, not all families feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like 18 is a good time for kids to go out and live on their own and figure out how to be adults. And not have their families bugging them. But yeah, I know not everyone feels that way. And so, I mean, I guess the bigger thing for me is, like, again, why have other colleges not done this? Because, like I said on this list, I'm sure I'm missing some, any of those kids who were good enough to go to Oklahoma State and wrestle, they did, right? And obviously some of them, like Jared Rochalt or Chandler Rogers, had pretty high level success at Oklahoma State. So it definitely seems like an unfair advantage on that level of they get them to Stillwater a year or two or 3 years early and they train them. And, you know, man, that seems like a huge advantage.
Oh, absolutely. You also have to, I can't believe they've gotten that many families to move there. It's like not that many people have job careers that are like, yep, we can just pack up and go to Stillwater and continue my career. I think that's probably what's holding a lot of people back. It's one thing to get, you know, a college kid there. It's another thing to say, hey, parents, leave your jobs, or hopefully you have the right jobs to that you can just move across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I'm excited for, I mean, follow Oklahoma High School Wrestling next year. A little bit of drama is not the worst thing.
How many characters are they going to have on their team next year? Feels like a lot.
I don't know. I mean, two Ferraris, right?
Yeah,
two Ferraris. A Voinovich.
Travis graduated.
Right.
Feels like there's someone else they have right now.
I mean, they're going to have a loaded team. Smith, but that's literally John Smith's son. Carter Young is born and raised Stillwater. He's not a transfer.
And he's not. And Carter's not going there.
Carter's going to Northwestern, which is
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So there's one.
Senior. That's going to make home visit if he gets too good, though. You think I'm joking? I'm not.
No. I don't think you're joking.
He's not going to visit.
Yeah. Holy cow. Okay. So... where do you want to go next?
I'm going to look at the Oklahoma State roster to make sure I'm not missing anyone that moved in.
Okay.
Don't think we are. Yeah. No, I think we're good.
Okay, so JD had thought maybe we could start talking a little tiers for next year. What do you think?
I'm great with that. I think the tiers are fun. When did we do them last year? Was it this early?
Who knows? We may have done them in March. We were so starved for content. I don't know when we did it.
Not March. That was
actually, I think y'all did them super late because the season didn't start until January.
Oh, you might be right.
Why don't we talk about this Michael Sears thing? I think that's interesting. I'm curious to hear what he's doing in grappling. And then here's yesterday or tomorrow.
I got to find some clips.
Takes a while.
I got to find some clips to share because Hollywood Mike Sears is
he's a character.
And the Flow Grappling team are doing big things in the sport of jiu-jitsu. And they
stalling is like, it's very accepted in jiu-jitsu. Not like wrestling. Like wrestling is definitely frowned upon, although there are some people who use stalling tactics. Jiu-jitsu, it's like, hey, that's just part of the thing. Like, that's what you do.
Yes, absolutely. It's ingrained in the fabric of of jiu-jitsu in within certain factions and rule sets. So the thing, one of the things with jiu-jitsu is like you think there's a lot of different rule sets in wrestling. You have no idea. It, grappling, it's like it's all out there. You've got ADCC rules, IBJJF rules. You've got this event promotion. You've got that event promotion. And so what Sears has done and the team, they've come up with a an actual rule set that like rewards actual action in jiu-jitsu and submission and calls out stalling and like, you know, it's been really kind of cool to see, and the community is really taking hold and the event is blowing up.
How are they doing it? I'm curious.
How are they? Basically, they've made the rules the way they want them. So like, if you're not, it's not based on like, positional, like if you get a takedown or if you like pass someone's guard, that is not valued near as much as like actual submission attempts and like actually trying.
Most of them, they're doing that because that was what I, that's where I think you have to go with it. I just think it's very difficult to score what is a submission attempt.
So there's no points. That's,
okay, so no points.
Right. It's like a submission only rule set, but like it's, you can't fake it. You can't like feebly grab a foot and say, okay, I'm trying to submit it. Like it has to be legitimate. So that right now, and the rules are such that like Joe Rogan and John Danaher are talking about, like, this is the most entertaining style of jiu-jitsu we've seen. Someone that doesn't know jiu-jitsu could sit and watch these events with this rule set and would enjoy it and find it entertaining. So that's obviously been the goal, and it's not, you know, fully even reached its full form. They still think there's room for improvement there with the rules, and you know, having great refs is a big part of it, and having them kind of on the same page. So they've done a lot, and it's a cool thing because like we could come up with a rule set, and we could say, hey, I get rid of grounded or this and that, but probably wouldn't take hold. But in grappling, like this is something that can really take off and be like, right now, who's number one is like the biggest like event promotion outside of like ADCC. Yeah.
They don't have to answer to the IOC or the NCAA or UWW.
So you're saying there's no points, but you're saying when they I'm assuming they pick a winner. If there's no submission at the end of the match, they pick a winner.
Yeah.
And that winner, is based on criteria, submission attempts is like number one or whatever.
Yes.
Yes. Makes sense.
Yeah. It's
much better.
And also, not even are they altering the rules. They say if you stall, screw you. You're not coming back.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like if you have a boring match and you know you're not trying to score, you're just trying to stall, like we're not gonna have you back. We're gonna use other guys and or gals that are more exciting. So they're so product focused. They're so focused on putting the most entertaining jiu-jitsu in front of people. It's like entertainment is the like main objective.
The who's number one belt is to award the title of the most exciting grappler at that weight.
Yeah, not the one who can stall or like game their way. Like they have to actually legitimately be entertaining and submission oriented. So it's a really cool thing. So we're excited about it. And you'll get to see that next week on the Burroughs Imar card. You'll get to see all the best, most exciting jiu-jitsu, and then you'll get to see the best part, a match between Burroughs and Imar.
I know the one that I mean, I don't know what rule you guys would like to take out or put in, but the one that annoys the crap out of me, and you listen, yes, to your point, you have to have educated referees who are willing to make the right calls and get the college coaches probably out of their face so often. When the top guy pushes the bottom guy directly out of bounds in folk style, that one annoys the crap out of me. And to me, it's almost never called. It's so obvious. I would call that in a heartbeat, and then they would essentially stop, right? That would not happen anymore because it's being called. So you would eliminate that whole thing. Bottom guys would get way more
folk style.
Ooh,
ouch!
Man. Look, not enough people are good enough on top. I like the idea. I like it in principle of you take a guy down, they should have to get up and they should have to get out. But it just leads to inferior product. It just does.
Man. Yeah.
So I love folk style.
You get your Zanes and your David Taylors, but for the most part, you get bad top and bottom. You get writing or an escape.
I think
you get a stand back up eventually, like at the end of the period.
Yeah, I disagree. I obviously love folk style wrestling. I like freestyle wrestling also. But no, I think the top bottom battles are fascinating. I think just the part that's hurting it is the unwillingness of referees to make real stalling calls. And, you know, what it's manifested itself into becoming is there are these, if you do this five count or that five count or this five count, it's stalling, but then there's no regular stalling. So it's like, you should be able, I mean, to what kind of what Christian was saying about the grappling is like, I should be able to watch and be like, oh, that guy's stalling. I shouldn't need a five count or something else to tell me. And so I guess maybe the problem is there's not enough consistent refereeing because, yeah, if you have a bunch of different referees who are calling a bunch of different things, that's going to make it very difficult for the coaches and competitors to train. But I think if we could just call top stalling properly, it would solve a whole bunch of the issues.
Man, and I also think...
I think that would just lead to a bunch of cut escapes, at least in the immediate future.
Which is fine. I mean, to your point, if they're not good on top and they can't turn and they're just riding to stall and they have to cut them, that's fine. That's what you want anyways. So that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, then you get a lot of, like, three takedown matches to three escapes, and then one guy gets one takedown, and it's like...
Yeah.
Three takedowns to one, but almost a tight match. Which, that could be okay, because it's like, if you don't want that, get better on top as well, but...
Yes. Yeah, don't suck on top. It's simple.
Yeah, yeah, so I don't think...
Or don't suck on bottom.
Right. I'm not as much of a folk style hater as JD. I think there's some tweaks that they can make the product overall better. But you look at the best wrestlers, I mean, I'm just looking at the podium at 125, man. They're either exciting and I think there's a lot of good top wrestlers also. I don't think I think if you look at the podium, I think it's full of tough mat wrestlers as well. So I don't think it's just I don't know. I don't find the mat to be a boring aspect. I think about some of the tiebreaker matches, while there's some horrible ones. Yeah. But like some of those,
there are some bad ones.
Some of those tiebreakers where they're pushing for the, what'd you say?
There's some great ones.
There's some great ones.
Yeah, and there's some good overtime matches too. Doesn't mean we should have overtime.
I don't disagree with that. I like criteria, but I think they're. I'm not as kill folk style.
End it.
Happy as some people are. I think there's some tweaks that can make it very very exciting. Just there's some.
Before he tries to start a movement or something.
Yeah, we can't. We have to kill a spirit.
No, they won't even initiate a step out, and people are begging for a step out. No one, not that many people are
including
begging.
Coaches.
Not that many people are begging to transition to freestyle. A lot of people are begging for a step out or even a change to the stalling rules, and they won't do that.
How does
folk style will not be gone anytime in the foreseeable future?
How about this? How does NCAA women's wrestling impact this? So if it becomes
smart, they went freestyle.
Right, I'm saying if they go freestyle, is that like maybe a potential domino? It's like, okay, it's gonna be a lot easier if we just do the same sport, because they're gonna do. You have to imagine with NCAA wrestling,
it's too ingrained in the culture in America right now. I feel like to just
it ain't that ingrained. It's not like baseball. It's freaking it's wrestling. It's a niche sport.
Yeah, niche sport where a lot of people hate change.
Yeah. Well,
and it's like,
look where that's got them.
Yeah, but it's like, so who changes first, high school or college? And you got to assume one will follow the other, but what? So you just make all these random high school wrestling coaches who, to be fair, like maybe not that versed in freestyle.
That's gonna be a big problem.
Yeah, so like, you're just gonna make them learn freestyle, learn parterre.
Yeah, I know I couldn't have done it. I could coach folk style wrestling. If I had to coach freestyle, it would have been even worse. But yeah,
I'm sure you would have figured it out.
Yeah, I would have figured it out. Okay, so there's.
I mean, in some ways it's more difficult, and in some ways it's easier, because if you think of like all the things that you need to learn on bottom and freestyle folk style, leg ride defense, crab ride defense, clearing riz, you know, all these things versus, and I don't want to make it sound too simplistic because there's obviously a lot of nuance to it, but just, hey, don't let the guy turn you over. And primarily it's going to be two moves, a gut wrench or a leg lace. Right? They go to leg lace you, put your ass back. If they go to gut wrench you, you know, fight the lock and then try to get tough and turn into it. Like, you know, that's way more simplistic than the bottom folk style. And then on top, obviously, kind of similar. One of the things I would worry about at the high school level, not the college level, is just like no mat time. Like, if you stink in folk style, sometimes you get pinned, but there's a lot of times where it goes the whole match and you lose, you know, 14-2 or something like that. Freestyle, dude, you could be over in 15 seconds every single time. Take down lace. And now this guy's getting like a cumulative 6 minutes of mat time the whole season or something like that.
Yeah, I feel you on that. And I kind of like the – you could – there's a lot of this in freestyle. But in folk style, there's just so many different ways to win and score and do things. Whereas like freestyle, to your point, top wrestling is basically limited to two moves by and large. But I do think that with freestyle, what you get is there are more creative opportunities to score in freestyle. There's more ways to score. There's more wild exchanges there, but you lose it on the mat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
What was the?
I also think it's odd that we're an Olympic sport and we don't wrestle folk style in the Olympics.
Yeah, it is kind of an interesting thing because Stanford would be like, oh, they cut Olympic sports, but I wonder if they ever look like, well, they don't actually wrestle the Olympic style, right? Either of them.
To be honest, I don't think that many people outside of wrestling even know that. But.
Yeah, don't tell them. Don't tell them. Ben, what was the worst stalling tactic used against you? Because we know you didn't stall.
Well, that was why I created the assassin. Everyone was just laying on the bottom, so I couldn't cradle them. And then I made up the assassin, and they couldn't do it anymore. It was tremendous.
People were literally wrestling freestyle against you on bottom, parterre.
Yeah, because I would cradle them so many times. So the last 2 years I created the assassin, and then that solved that issue. That was probably the number one.
How did you, what's that process like? Like, do you start messing around with it in a practice? I'm sure guys were doing that in the room.
It's actually the ultimate camp story where I tell kids, like, hey, if I'm showing you a bunch of moves at camp, I understand that they're not all going to go into your wrestling, like, right away. But you need to remember what you learn here because the primary reason you came here was to learn. And if you don't remember these things, then it's a waste of everyone's time. So the assassin, I actually learned as a Greco-Roman move in 1995.
Huh.
And I never used – I didn't do it one freaking time. Not once. And then, you know, this problem was happening like a decade later. We're talking 2005, 6, right, that season. And the problem was happening. And I thought back to that move. And I'm like, huh, what about that move? Like, that might be a possibility. And then, I tried it. And boom, it started working. And then I started doing it on everybody.
Dang.
And obviously, in Greco, you would roll them. You wouldn't hold them on their back. The idea was to keep rolling them through, you know?
Right.
So I thought, well, I could probably do that, but I'll just, you know, obviously I'll put the hip down, I'll pivot, and then they'll stay there. And that became the solution. So that was the number one problem, and I found a solution.
Dang. Well, kids, pay attention in camp. Even in Greco camp.
You might use it a decade later. You never know.
In a folk style match.
Even at stall camp. Okay. Let's go to – why don't we go to tiers and then at 125, talk about those a little bit, and then it'll probably be go time. What do you say? I almost did something audacious here. Almost made a big mistake. I almost put Pat and Vito in tier one with Spencer, and then I didn't. I'm really glad I didn't.
So when I looked at the doc last night, there was no – oh, wait.
Look, scroll down.
Okay. Scroll down. Got it. Pat and Vito. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Wait, we're good with what?
The way you have tier two, with the three people.
Yeah.
If Vito goes 125, I think it's at least a conversation he could creep up with Spencer. If Spencer is the Spencer of this year's NCAA Finals.
Which it absolutely will not be. That's not going to happen.
Is he getting his ATL's fixed or not? We don't even know.
Is he getting – no. Fixed is – that's – his situation will be substantially improved.
Hopefully.
Will he have ACLs?
Hopefully.
No. He's not going to have ACLs. He's not going to get surgery. But he's going to be able to strengthen around it and get it popping. So I think he will be not.
Why is he going to do the rest of his wrestling career with no ACLs?
Well, you never know. I mean, there could come a time where here's what I think, a prediction. He's going to try, and he's going to get it strengthened around, just like the what's his name said. And then if that's going well, he'll keep going. And if he has a setback, I think he would get it fixed with the idea that, listen, 2023 is really where your eyes are going. He has multiple red shirts at his disposal that he could use. He has his real one. He could take a medical if he got hurt or whatever. So he's got options there. And then 2023 is really the world team to make, right? So you get on that team so you can qualify the weight, so you can sit out, so you can make the Olympic team in 24. So I think first thing is...
My man's just going to be hobbling like Dan Gable.
No.
When he's old.
He'll be all right.
But Chris, do you do both at the same time and just get wheelchaired everywhere?
I don't know how they would do that with both of them. I do know that... So remember, I learned more about ACLs based on your inquiry, Ben, because you're like, why did he not, after the Mueller match, get it fixed? Because that was a re-tear of the ACL. If you remember, he tore it in high school. He tore it again. So that process is not 6 months. It is a year, right?
Oh, if you do the same one.
Same one is a year. Therefore... Ooh. So think about the implications there. That's trials, right? Remember, 2019, you're thinking, if I'm a year, that's jamming up trials. So he didn't get it. And then he was wrestling great. So then he didn't get it. And then Olympics got pushed another year, so you still aren't going to get it. And then he tore the other one against Schroeder in the Big Ten finals. So that's how you end up with no ACLs at your disposal, but three NCAA titles.
Dang.
So kind of a weird that the timelines and everything make it make sense, even though I didn't realize that if you tear it again, it's a longer road to recovery.
So have you done research? Because my other question there would be does the percentage to go up to keep re-tearing it? Like your percentage to tear it one time is 1%. If you've already torn it, does that go up to 5%? And if you've already torn it twice on the same knee, does it go up to 10%? You know, is it something like that?
I think that's part of it too. I think that if you get it operated, I think the more it gets operated, I think the higher probability of a re-tear becomes.
Got it.
So, yeah. So that's why I think Spencer will be... He'll be healthier next year for sure than he was. He won't look like he did at the finals for sure.
Got it.
So that's good. But it is, I do think there's Vito and Glory are probably higher level folk stylers than Courtney. I don't know though. That's an interesting conversation.
So with Courtney, so I feel like they're a higher level for sure. With Courtney, do we feel comfortable with him in tier two? Because, you know, and that's separating him from Taylor Lamont, he had a tiebreaker with. Jacob Camacho, 4-2. Eric Barnett, 9-7. And that was crazy because he got a bunch of takedowns versus escapes and stalling or maybe one takedown.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't like head and shoulders better than everyone else last year. So, you know, it kind of feels weird to separate him from, you know, a Lamont or a Camacho or that type of.
I feel like Courtney earned the benefit of the doubt to be in the second tier for a couple of reasons. One, he beat all those guys. He did not lose to them.
Yep.
All those guys in this tier, they all lost to people all around them. They were all losing matches and beating matches. Yep. And they were like part of this like group of people that just cannibalize itself. You know, Foley beats this guy, and McKee loses to this guy, but he beats this guy.
Courtney also had the benefit of only wrestling them once.
True. A lot of this is in the Big Ten and whatnot. But even like a Teske, he beat a Teske. I don't know. I think
got killed twice by Devin.
Yeah, but if you maybe would have dueled, you know, a Pat McKee and a Brody Teske and Sam Latona earlier in the year, maybe he would have lost to them.
Well, I think it's unfair to just assume that.
I'm not assuming. I'm just.
Well, I mean, you could say that about any of these guys. You know, what if Gloria Ramirez? What if he? I mean, the bottom line is he won all these matches. He only lost to Spencer Lee. Whereas all these guys, they were losing in the early matches too. Eric Barnett, Pat McKee. These guys were all over the place. And Courtney is like the one.
What about
other than what?
Schrader. Schroeder. What about – so Courtney lost to Devin Schroeder fairly convincingly twice.
How are you still calling him Schrader? You've messed it up so many times.
Are we throwing 2020 results out? Is that what you're doing?
Why do you say that?
I'm okay with that. People say 2020's out because he got majored by Devin Schroeder and he got pinned by Devin Schroeder twice in 2020.
Who Courtney did?
Anna Courtney, yes.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I'd throw it out now because look at what Courtney became. And then also, you know, Schroeder, I don't know if he regressed or wasn't as healthy or whatever, but he did not have as good a season as he did the year before. But then again, you know, he had a Cronin loss the year previously and a Colioka loss.
Yeah, I mean, his season's not really that bad. Okay, he got pinned by Eric Barnett. He was winning that match, and if you remember, it was a crazy scramble. Mm-hmm. He lost to Patrick McKee, who ended up taking third. He lost to Raymond Foley, who was ranked second in the country. He got beat by Spencer twice, and then I would say the biggest knock you could have on him was then he lost the round of 12 match to Eric Barnett, 5-4.
Yeah, I mean,
so
he's do you think he should be in a different tier? So I have him in the third tier.
Well, I really feel. You know what? I don't hate it if you do, but I feel like you could also justify putting Courtney in that. I mean, that's a really big tier, but you know, Latona, Lamont, all those.
So
guys
I don't know if we've even said it. Bad radio. We haven't even said the tiers. We're just talking about them because we're looking at a list, but no one else knows our list, so it's totally. So tier one is Spencer Lee, and he's by himself. Tier two: Pat Glory, Vito Rujal, Brandon Courtney. Tier three is big. McKee, Hildebrandt, Lamont, Latona, Teske, Camacho, Cardinale, Barnett, D'Agostino, Schroeder, Foley. Tier four, Robert Howard, Malik Heinzman, Mastro, and Ragusan. Courtney has established himself above the fray with these tier three guys. They were all losing to each other. And that's not the case for Brandon. He separated himself. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible for one of those guys to pick him off, but they sure as heck didn't last year, and his draw was not great. It wasn't like a, you know, ideal path. He was opposite Spencer, which helps, but you know, he had to beat some good guys to get there. So I think he's separated.
I agree.
Okay.
But
right. I don't know if I see, and listen, maybe he has gotten a lot better. Maybe that was the difference. But if he were to wrestle, Devin Schroeder or Rayvon Foley and lose the match this year, I'm not all that shocked. Because if you look, going into the NCAA tournament, the highest ranked guy he had wrestled was
Teske,
5-3. But then after that, it's DeSario at number 38.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
So he's not getting the same effect as these Big Ten guys who are wrestling a whole bunch of really highly ranked
guys. Which is why going into NCAAs, I was predicting Courtney's going to fall off. All the Big Ten guys in the ACC duo, they're going to beat him. Wrong. Big wrong. He goes through Camacho. He goes through Eric Barnett. He beat Taylor Lamont. I mean, he did it. Lamont beat Latona, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. Yes. So, I think that's about right.
Okay,
but as I say that, Ben,
I just wanted to raise a concern. That's
no,
it.
I think it's the question to ask because when you look at the second tier with Pat, Vito, and Courtney, I think he kind of sticks out a little bit there, and I'm kind of back. I'm like, well, is he really? I don't think he's with those guys.
Is he tier three island?
Is he? That's the question.
Oh,
I could get with that because I think he's above the fray with that current tier three group, but I don't think he's on the level of Glory and Vito.
Who I'm also not convinced Vito's going 25 again.
Man, I think he should.
It might be better team wise if he goes 33.
Man. Listen, I don't know what to expect for Greg Giacomahalas.
No.
Like I think he's great, but we haven't seen him. What's the last high level tournament we got to see and just to kind of gauge where Greg's at, right? Because I know right now Vito's a top two or three guy, and I guess you could say he is at 33 as well. I mean, he just beat Dayton in freestyle. Although I don't know how that match goes in folk style, Dayton versus Vito, and I don't know how it goes in Roman versus Vito in folk style.
Yeah.
So maybe it could be 6-1.
Top folk style also.
What about top and folk style?
Vito's good on top and folk style also.
Yeah, he is. He's good at both styles. So I don't know where he fits in. I just feel like he's powerful, he's fast, and I think that's exacerbated at 25. And I think at 33, he might lose a little bit of that pop. Like I don't see him running through a Dayton or a Roman. Yeah.
There's also Spencer Lee there.
That is true. The boogeyman does exist. Who won Glory and Vito hit? I want to say NCAAs in, would that have been 19? But I can't recall who beat who.
Well, Glory beat him at EIWAs, but Vito beat him at the duel.
Okay.
Yeah. Earlier that year.
Hey, does no ACL Spencer beat Roman Bravo Young in March of 2021 or no?
No. Okay, so we're talking no ACL.
We're talking at NCAA's Spencer versus RBY.
No, I don't think so.
RBY.
I think RBY is bigger. I mean, it's a different weight class.
But you're talking about Vito going one weight or the other.
Yeah.
Vito's also bigger than Spencer. Maybe not necessarily stronger, but...
Definitely not. I don't know. Well, I don't know what that question matters, I guess. I don't know if I understand.
It's hypothetical.
No, you guys literally just said that Vito should go 33 because one of the reasons that he may bump up was because Spencer's a tougher hurdle to get over. So that's why I think it's relevant.
Okay, got it. Yes, he is a tougher hurdle than Roman, but yeah, and also, but
you just picked Roman.
Okay, no. Well, hold on. Roman is first of all, you said no. You guys said March Spencer, the one that just tore his ACL. That guy doesn't exist anymore. Next year, that's totally irrelevant question. Like that's time travel. It's not important to the conversation.
Time travel.
That was the past.
That was the past. This is now. Caleb Piles. Okay. So those are 125 tiers. Good stuff there.
Big tier three.
But it's kind of those guys were crazy all year long, and now we don't get to get yelled at about where we put Eric Barnett this year.
Blew it last year.
No, we didn't, based on the results.
I was able to see the future.
You did. You did. You didn't tell me you saw the future, and also you were a little biased.
Yeah.
So, so we're gonna go. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Ben may or may not be back in his studio. We hope they fix his internet, and we hope he stops mowing over it with his lawnmower. That's just a hope. There's no telling if it's going to happen. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday. Goodbye.